Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 2, Text 18. Param padam vaishnavam amananantitad. Param padam vaishnavam amanantitad. Yaneti netit yatad usvisava. Yaneti netit yatad usvisava. Visrija duratmyam ananya saurida. Srijya durapyam ananya saurida. Rido pagu yarha padam pade pade. Rido pagu yarha padam pade pade. Param padam vaishnavam amanantitad. Yaneti netit yatad usrisiksava. Vishrijya durapyam ananya saurida. Rido pagu yarha padam pade pade.
Thank you.
Padam, the supreme. Padam, situation. Vaishnavam, in relation with the personality of Godhead. Amananti, do they know? Tat, that. Yat, which. Na iti, not this. Na iti, not this. Iti, thus. Atat, godless. Usrikshava, those who desire to avoid. Vrishrija, giving it up completely. Duratnyam, perplexities. Ananya, absolutely. Sorida, in goodwill. Rida upaguya, taking them into his heart. Arha, that which is only worshipable. Padam, lotus feet. Pade, pade, at every moment. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The transcendentalists desire to avoid everything godless, for they know that the supreme situation in which everything is related with the Supreme Lord, for they know that supreme situation in which everything is related with the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Therefore, a pure devotee who is in absolute harmony with the Lord does not create perplexities, but worships the lotus feet of the Lord at every moment, taking them into his heart. Report. In the Bhagavad Gita, Madhama, my abode, is mentioned several times. And according to the version of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, there exists the unlimited spiritual sky wherein the planets are called Vaikunthas, or the abode of the Personality of Godhead. In that sky, which is far, far beyond the material sky, and even its sevenfold coverings, there is no need of the sun or the moon, nor is there necessity of electricity for illumination, because the planets are self-illuminating and more brilliant than the material suns. Pure devotees of the Lord are absolutely in harmony with the Personality of Godhead, or in other words, they always think of the Lord as their only dependable friend and well-wisher. They do not care for any mundane creature up to the status of Brahma, the Lord of the universe. Only they can definitely have a clear vision of the Vaikuntha planets. Such pure devotees, being perfectly directed by the Supreme Lord, do not create any artificial perplexity in the matter of transcendental understanding by wasting time in discussing what is Brahman and what is non-Brahman or Maya. Nor do they falsely think of themselves as one with the Lord, or argue that there is no existence of the Lord separately, or that there is no God at all, or that living beings are themselves God, or that when God incarnates himself, he assumes a material body. Nor do they concern themselves with many obscure speculative theories, which are in actuality so many stumbling blocks on the path of transcendental understanding. Apart from the class of impersonalists or non-devotees, there are also classes who pose themselves as devotees of the Lord, but at heart maintain the idea of salvation by becoming one with the impersonal Brahman. They wrongly manufacture their own way of devotional service by open debauchery and mislead others who are simpletons or debauchees like themselves. All these non-devotees and debauchees are, according to Vishvanath Chakravarti, Duratmas, or crooked souls in the dress of Mahatmas, or great souls. Such non-devotees and debauchees are completely excluded from the list of transcendentalists by the presentation of this particular verse by Sukadev Goswami. So, the Vaikuntha planets are factually the supreme residential places called the Parampadam. The impersonal Brahmajyoti is also called the Parampadam due to its being the rays of the Vaikuntha planets, as the sun's rays are the rays of the sun. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text 27, it is clearly said that the impersonal Brahmajyoti rests on the person of the Lord. And because everything rests on the Brahmajyoti, directly and indirectly, everything is generated from the Lord, everything rests on Him, and after annihilation, everything is merged in Him only. Therefore, nothing is independent of Him. A pure devotee of the Lord no longer wastes valuable time in discriminating the Brahman from the non-Brahman, because he knows perfectly well that the Lord Param Brahman, by His Brahman energy, is interwoven in everything, and thus everything is looked upon by a devotee as the property of the Lord. The devotee tries to engage everything in his service and does not create perplexities by falsely lording it over the creation of the Lord. He is so faithful that he engages himself as well as everything else in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. In everything, the devotee sees the Lord and he sees everything in the Lord. The specific disturbance created by a Duratma or crooked soul is due to his maintaining that the transcendental form of the Lord is something material. Om Gina Timanam Dasha Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshudanilya Tamyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So, I'd like to start by thanking all of you for being here in class. I'm honored by your presence, as I am by those who are listening in on the internet. Thank you. I realize everybody's time is valuable, particularly to themselves, and I know I feel like that, so I hope I can say something worthwhile to make you feel like you haven't wasted your time and made a mistake coming. I always find it difficult at the beginning of a class after reading Prabhupada's purport. It's like going on, it's like being the act that follows some fantastic, you know, musical group or Shakespearean play or something like that. It's like, what do you say after you read something like that? It's a masterpiece. You know, it's just like, as I'm reading it, I'm just thinking, wow, how well written that is. How many brilliant points Prabhupada's making and how well he's making them. Like Amla Bhaktaraj said about Narantra's class the other day, he said, Narantra, at the end of the class, he turned to you and he said, Maharaj, do you have anything to say? And Maharaj said, you've said it all and you said it well. Right? So that's what Prabhupada does every morning. He says it all, what? Yeah, it was unrehearsed spontaneous. But that's what Prabhupada does. He says it all, and he says it well. So it's a tough act to follow, just after reading one of Prabhupada's purports. But, but on this, trying to say something about it, Prabhupada's talking here in the purport about the Duratma, and he in one part of the purport, he gives a list of all the different misconceptions that people become victim of. Let's see if I can find it quickly here. He says, such pure devotees being directed by the Supreme Lord do not create any artificial perplexity in the matter of transcendental understanding by wasting time in discussing what is Brahman and what is non-Brahman or Maya, nor do they falsely think themselves as one with the Lord or argue that there is no existence of the Lord separately, or that there is no God at all, or that the living beings are themselves God, or that when God incarnates himself, he assumes a material body, nor do they concern, there's a whole big list here of things that the pure devotee doesn't do, nor do they concern themselves with any obscure speculative theories. So, but he sort of sums it up at the end of the purport, where he says how the specific disturbance created by the Dharatma, or their specific, well, it's the disturbance created by them, and it's their specific misconception or problem is that they maintain that the transcendental form of the Lord is something material. In other words, they're not even able to muster up provisional faith that, okay, let's, you know, perhaps if the form of the Lord isn't something material. You know, they're not even able to give this philosophy the benefit of the doubt, which is crucial. And if you're not able to do that, you're really in a dangerous position. I'll give an example. Here in New Dwarka, and back about 45 years ago, 1975, there was an incident. Maybe some of you might have been here at that time. I wasn't. I was still on the East Coast. But some of you might have been here at that time. There was an incident. There was a couple of devotees in the temple. They were, they were intelligent fellows, but they were at loggerheads with the management on a couple specific points. You know, they felt like things weren't being organized properly. Their idea was that there should be the women should receive training how to be good wives, and not so much emphasis should be on sending them out on sankirtan, but they should be trained because probably they're going to get married. And the brahmacharis, same thing. They should somebody should sit them down and find out which brahmacharis want to get married, and try to kind of work out some arrangements for how they will be able to maintain themselves when they're married, like this. So anyway, their particular take on things wasn't so much appreciated by the management at that time, and so they weren't feeling like very well appreciated. You know, like their point of view was being welcomed and valued. So that was a problem. And they went to Prabhupada right up here in his room here to complain about that, you know. And Prabhupada was aware that, you know, they weren't exactly angels themselves. And it wasn't just all one-sided. So Prabhupada said, okay, you know, I understand you have some differences of opinions with your God brothers. They were his disciples too. They were both initiated. So Prabhupada said, okay, well, we'll do then. What we should do is, and this is Prabhupada's words, he said, then we have to hear both of you. We have to hear both of you. There will be regular court, and we shall see. And they agreed to that. You know, Prabhupada said, before me, I'll be there, before me. You are saying something. They may say something else. So brothers together, we sit down together, and we discuss. So I thought that was very reasonable, and I was really very pleased when I read this just a few days ago. That sounds like a very reasonable way to resolve conflicts among devotees. You know, Prabhupada was prepared to do that. And then, unfortunately for these two individuals, they went on from there. You know, they made the point that, well, actually, Prabhupada, aside from that, you know, these managerial things, there's something else that we have questions, you know, that on the philosophy, some things are kind of that we need answered. And Prabhupada, and then they brought up an example about how in the Krishna book there was the statement about how King Ugrasena had 4 billion personal servants. It's in the Krishna book, right? Yeah, they gave that number, 4 billion. They didn't read the Krishna book very carefully. But anyway, so they brought that up to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, Prabhupada, I'll read it. It says, so everyone is servant. What is the question of 4 billion? You know? And then when they were still having difficulty, you know, on that particular point, Prabhupada said, well, go to some other point. You know, why do you dwell on that point? Say, well, you know, when we bring it up to people when we're preaching, they it's a stumbling block for them. They can't, you know, they find it hard to believe. And Prabhupada said, first he said, yes, so you want to preach this particular portion, no other portion? And then they gave that argument that, well, Prabhupada, they're bringing it up to us, you know, they claim. And Prabhupada goes, they bring it up to you, but nobody's bringing it up to me. And then they were supported by another devotee who happened to be there. Anyway, so it came to the point where he said, okay, so just don't worry about that portion. You know, just focus on some other thing that you feel is meaningful and valuable. So then they said, but, you know, Prabhupada, they'll insist, you know, if they can't understand this point, this is supposed to be perfect knowledge, so everything should be understandable, correct? So then this is Prabhupada's response. You know, the devotee says, but we want the people to accept. If we say to a scientific person there was 4 billion, and if our statement is wrong, and then Prabhupada interrupted him and said, and this is very important, Prabhupada said, but our position is that if some portion we cannot understand, it is our incapability. And that is like one of the most fundamental points in our philosophy. Our position is that if some portion, or a lot of portion, we don't understand, we have to take it. It's our incapability. And then Prabhupada goes on to say, that's all. Unless we have got this faith, and unless we're prepared to you know, have that faith, that when I'm not understanding, that's my incapability. He says, we cannot use these Puranas. In the Puranas, there are many such statements. Therefore, many people do not accept the Puranas. So what can be done? So this is a very fundamental point of Krishna consciousness, that when we don't understand something, we have to take it that that's our incapability. And actually, there's a lot to not understand. I mean, when you stop and think about it, they zeroed in on this one particular thing about Maharaj Ugrasena and the 4 billion or 40 quadrillion or whatever it is, servants. But if you stop and think about it, practically everything in Krishna consciousness is, pretty difficult to understand. The holy name is Krishna, right? That's our philosophy, right? In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th chapter, Krishna says, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. Okay? Now, I just said 30 seconds ago that the holy name and Krishna are non-different. So does that mean that the holy name is the source of all spiritual and material worlds and everything emanates from the holy name? Because it's non-different from Krishna, right? I think it does. But that's pretty hard to understand. I mean, there's the deities, that's Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in full, the Archivigraha. It's not just some sort of like, Prabhupada gives the example of a mailbox, and if you put your letter in the mailbox, but that, the Archivigraha is that's Krishna fully there, you see? So in other words, every aspect of Krishna consciousness is, if you have a mundane way of thinking, it's hard to understand. So very, very, very important point here that Prabhupada said. We have to take it, what we're not understanding, we have to be humble. You have to have some humility and take it, this is my incapability. Now, this point appears as a statement in the Padma Purana. It's probably a verse that everybody knows. It goes, Tahak Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam Indriye Sevan Muke Hijivado Swayam Eva Sparatiyada. And the word for word translation on that, Atak means therefore, Atak Shri Krishna, Nam Adi, beginning with the name. So therefore, Krishna, beginning with the name, Na Bhaved Grayam Indriye. He's not understood by the material senses. You can understand, academically, you could, get the ideas and everything, but as far as actually understanding, realizing, transcendentally appreciating this philosophy, it can't be done with your material mind and senses. Nabhaved Grayam, right? Is that the correct one? Nabhaved Grayam Indriye. It's not understood by the material senses. See? Then it goes on to say, but Sevan Muke. Seva means service. Muke, mouth. Jiva, tongue. Ado, but mouth service beginning with the tongue. Certainly, mouth service beginning with the tongue. Swayam, chanting. In other words, Swayam Eva Sparatyada, that the actual reality will be revealed. See, so that's Krishna consciousness. That's Krishna consciousness. It's a whole different process of learning something. In the material world, you know, you go and you study something and you memorize it and you know. Okay, that could be there too. But ultimately, to understand something in Krishna consciousness, it has to be revealed to you. It has to be revealed to you, and it has revealed to fully understand something. There's gyan, is the point I'm making. There's gyan and there's vigyan. And to have gyan is, we want gyan. You got to have gyan, okay? But we want to go beyond that. To get vigyan, you have to get the mercy of the internal potency. You have to get the mercy of the spiritual master, the mercy of Krishna. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. But before I do, another qualification is you have to be humble and you have to be submissive. In the Bhagavad Gita, everybody knows this verse, fourth chapter, text 34, it says, Tad vidhi paripatena padipashnena sevaya. It says, just try to learn the truth by approaching a bona fide spiritual master, inquire from him submissively. You have to be submissive. So you have to have some, you have to be humble, and then you have to submissively approach the bona fide spiritual master. And you have to do service. See, it's not enough just to academically. You know, gyan is not enough. You have to, you need the ideas. You have to, understand the ideas. But then you have to submissively render service. And then when you inquire, by the mercy of the spiritual master, the proper understanding will be revealed to you. And that same principle is explained by Krishna himself in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Everybody knows these verses. I guess I'm just like an ABC kind of level speaker, but Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam dadami buddhiyogam tam yenam mam upayanti te Tesham eva anukampartam aham agyana jam tamaha nasyami atmabhavashto jnana dipena bhashvata. Krishna says, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love. In other words, to those who approach the bona fide spiritual master submissively, render service unto him, inquire, follow his instructions, to those people, right? Krishna says, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. And he goes on to say, I who am dwelling within their heart. And here's how it works. Here's how you go from gyan to vigyan, okay? Krishna says, I am dwelling in their heart, and I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. See, so when you're sincere, when you're submissive, and you're humble, et cetera, then Krishna is pleased. The spiritual master is pleased. Krishna is pleased, and he reveals to you. He enlightens you from within so that you'll actually understand. So it's super important, you see, there's this quality of, like Prabhupada says, unless we have this faith, we cannot use these puranas. So faith is it's a quality, but you can develop it. You can cultivate it. See? It's like cleanliness. You know, how do you develop the quality of cleanliness? By trying to be clean. It's not like either you got it or you don't, is the point I'm trying to make. Somebody might think, well, faith is just like in the mind, you know. Either you got it or you don't. Not quite. It's not quite like that. Just like, say you want to become tolerant. How do you develop the quality of tolerance? By practicing, tolerating. How do you develop the quality of forgiveness? By practicing, being forgiving. You see, how do you develop the quality of patience? By practicing. So how do you develop the quality of faith, okay, in these different ideas? Well, it's a little bit more concrete even. By being faithful and following the instructions of the spiritual master. No, there's a connection. If you faithfully follow the instructions of the spiritual master, then these things will be revealed to you. So you'll develop. If you faith, it's like the practical. It's the practice of being, of developing the quality of faithfulness, of having faith, is just to follow the instructions. You know, but. In Krishna consciousness, it's more than just practice makes perfect. Everybody knows that expression, practice makes perfect. Well, in Krishna consciousness, that's there. Practice makes perfect, but there's a transcendental dimension that's added to it. You see, it's, in the material world, you just practice something and you get better at it. Of course, this super soul is there too, helping you learn. But in Krishna consciousness, when you're practicing, particularly this, you're practicing following the instructions of the spiritual master, then, okay, yeah, just like any ordinary material thing, you learn something, but Krishna's more involved. As I said, you know, Krishna's in the heart, and nasyami atma bhavishto, jnanatapena bhavishto. Krishna's more involved. He's observing. You know, he's aware of what his devotees are doing, and he's reciprocating. You see? So it's more, you know, it's more accentuated. So that's an important point, that, you know, as devotees, to avoid the pitfall of what Prabhupada was talking about in the purport, we have to cultivate that understanding, that attitude of being humble, and whatever we don't understand, take it as our own incapability, and just try to follow faithfully the instructions of the spiritual master and develop, you know, develop that faith so that at some point we'll be eligible to have all this, you know, these things revealed to us. The alternative to that, if we're not prepared to, you know, to try to, those who are not prepared to try to cultivate, develop this humble, submissive attitude towards this transcendental knowledge, then their lot is this. I'm going to read a paragraph from, I don't know where it's from actually. I think it's from the 10th canto, a purport from of Prabhupada's from the 10th canto. And this is describing what the, how would you say, the situation of everybody else aside from devotees. Prabhupada says, everyone beginning from the small insect known as the Indra Gopa up to Indra, the king of the heavenly planets, is obliged to undergo the results of his fruitive activities. That's it. See, when outside of devotional service, this is what you're dealing with. You're obliged to undergo the results of your fruitive activities. That's all. There's no, like, another category. You know, there's people who are just in devotional service and Krishna's, you know, taking care of them. And there's people who are, don't want to have anything to do with it. They're the Dharatmas. Okay, yeah, fine. You want to be a Dharatma? Go ahead. Nobody, who's stopping you? If you want to be a Dharatma, go ahead. But this is what you're looking at. You're looking at being obliged to undergo the results of your fruitive activities. Then Prabhupada says, we may superficially see that one is suffering or enjoying because of some external causes, but the real cause is one's own fruitive activities. Even when someone kills someone else, it is to be understood that that person who was killed met the fruitive results of his own work and that the man who killed them acted as an agent of material nature. Anyway, so the point is clear. So that's what you're looking at. You know, if you're not, you know, if you want to be not prepared to try to be a devotee, then you're looking at that, just having to undergo the results of your own fruitive activities. So, not very attractive. Not a very attractive alternative. Much more intelligent thing to do, as it's stated in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, karma jam buddhi yukto hi palam tyaktva manishina janma bandha vinir muktam padam gachanti ananmayam. One of my favorite verses. It talks about how the great sages, you know, being engaged in, thus engaged in devotional service, the great sages and devotees, they free themselves from the reactions of fruitive work, and thus they are free from the cycle of birth and death, and they're eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. See, so that's the alternative, once again. See, that we just engage in devotional service, and by engaging in devotional service, you're changing your destiny. You're changing your destiny. See? It's kind of like if somebody's sentenced, you know, you're sentenced to death, say, for whatever. You're sentenced to some 50 years in, or 20 years in solitary confinement or whatever. Nobody can change that sentence, generally speaking. You're sentenced. So all conditioned souls are sentenced. They're sentenced to, as we read here, undergo the results of their fruitive activities. But there is one way of getting out of that. And that's by surrendering to Krishna. I'm going to read something from the 9th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, very short, that kind of very vividly illustrates this point. This is from this past time with the king. Well, I'll just read it. Being condemned by the curse of Vashishta, King Sodasha devoured the Brahmin exactly as a tiger eats its prey. He was the king, and he was actually a devotee. Even though the Brahmin's wife spoke so pitiably, Sodasha was unmoved by her lamentation. And the purport's very interesting. Prabhupada says, this is an example of destiny. King Sodasha was condemned by the curse of Vashishta. What happened was it wasn't his fault actually even. He invited his spiritual master to lunch, and previously he spared the life. He was hunting in the forest, and there was these two rakshasas, right? And he spared the life of one of them, one he killed, and they were brothers, and the other he spared his life. And the other one, rather than being grateful that, okay, I didn't get killed, or I think he shot at one and he didn't even intentionally kill him, but one was killed and he spared the life of the other. Anyway, the other brother decided to get revenge, and he became a cook in the kingdom of the king. And when the king Sodasha invited his spiritual master to lunch, he deliberately served him human flesh. You see? Without the knowledge of the king. The king didn't know anything about that. See, and Vashishta Muni, because he's such an elevated sage, he could understand that's what was going on, that he had been served human flesh. And he cursed the king to become a rakshasa. And what Vashishta Muni didn't understand was that the king had nothing to do with that. That was being done totally unbeknownst to him. So, but he got that curse. And then it came out. It came to light that actually the king had nothing to do with that. But Vashishta couldn't. He couldn't reverse the curse. Yeah. So anyway, so therefore it says that even though he was well qualified, he was actually a very great devotee, he could not restrain himself, but the power of the curse was there. He couldn't restrain himself from becoming a tiger-like rakshasa, for this was his destiny. So, we're not talking about curses here, but the point is that destiny is very powerful. Destiny is very powerful. It's so powerful that despite the fact that this king was actually an elevated devotee, he couldn't restrain himself. He couldn't restrain himself from becoming a tiger-like rakshasa and devouring this Brahmin. Despite the fact that his wife was right there and she was, kind of speaking to him and explaining in different ways, you're a great king, we all look up to you, we know your saintly qualities, blah, 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 and he was there, and he's listening to her, and she finished her speech, right, and then he went, oh, well, sorry, and he just ate her husband, so he couldn't restrain himself. So Prabhupada goes on, he says, talabhyate dukavat anyata sukham. As one is put into distress by destiny, destiny can also put one into a happy situation. But here's the sentence I really wanted to read. Prabhupada says, destiny is extremely strong, but one can change destiny if one comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Let me read it again. Destiny is extremely strong, but one can change destiny if one comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness. And then he quotes from the Brahma Samhita, Karmani Nidrahati Kintu Chabhakti Bhajam. Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, text 54. So this is a really important point. And this has been something that I've been meditating on consciously and subconsciously. I guess I don't think you really can meditate subconsciously, but it's been like a very powerful, motivating part of my whole life for the last 47 years. This understanding that you can change your destiny if you're able to come to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Because, my destiny is not good. I know the kind of things, the kind of body I have, and the kind of activities I performed earlier in this lifetime, and the kind of activities I must have performed in a previous lifetime to get this body and be in the situation I'm in. So, expression, can you read the handwriting on the wall? I can understand from different things that it's not a good idea for me to just go, yeah, let it come. Come on, destiny is going to be fun. No, I'm cruising for a bruising, see? So I'm always thinking like, well, I got to do something to try to, get out of this predicament I'm in. And here's the hope. The hope is that By engaging in devotional service, that destiny can be changed if I can come to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Now, I want to mention, thinking like that, it's definitely not the highest. It's not thinking like Prahlad Maharaj, who was thinking, I don't care about if I get out of this material world. I just want to, save all these. I'm just thinking about all these poor conditioned souls who are here rotting, and I want to do something to help them. Or Vasudev Dat, that's also. That's also way more elevated. But what I'm describing, I think, is legit. It's an acceptable entry level Krishna consciousness. That let me engage seriously in devotional service, in hopes of being elevated to the platform of Krishna consciousness and changing the destiny. So I don't have to suffer like a dog or just be out there in total illusion, engaging in more activities that are just going to cause me more suffering in the future. So this is, as I said, an acceptable entry-level Krishna consciousness. Can anybody see the time? I can't, without glasses. Okay, so I'll stop there. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say? Complaints, questions, comments? Arjuna Prabhu, yeah.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a really, really insightful presentation, Brigapati Prabhu. Just one point of reference, because you made a reference to the 10th canto and you said you weren't sure exactly where it came from. It's very important in the 10th canto, especially, to know exactly where the reference is coming from. Because as we know, Srila Prabhupada completed up to the 13th chapter. And beyond that, the purports are being written by his disciples. Now, that's not to say that they're not important or that they're incorrect in any way. But the audience should be informed of that. So you should know that this is not necessarily, or it's not at all, a Prabhupada purport.
No, this is a Prabhupada purport.
You should make a distinction between Prabhupada purports
Didn't I say that?
No, you just said, okay. You said it's from the 10th canto, but I'm not sure where.
Okay, it is definitely a Prabhupada purport.
So if you know for sure, then just go to the next step and say this is from 10.11 or 10.2 or wherever. So we know for sure that, because Prabhupada only translated and commentated up until the 13th chapter of the 10th.
Right. Yeah, no, that was definitely a Prabhupada purport, what I read you.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Anybody else like to? I'm the Bhakti Maharaj. Mic over there.
I just wanted to make one rather small point. Before I do, thank you very much for many nice insights and many good perceptions, which were all beneficial to all of us. So, when we use the word destiny, you cannot use that same word. You cannot use that same word for a non-devotee as for a devotee. You can't just say destiny. You have to qualify it with an adjective as to what kind of destiny, what kind of person, what kind of life is he living. For example, you hinted at it, but I don't think we really got into it. Destiny, which is being undergone, if you want to call it that, by a devotee, is different than that which is being undergone by a non-devotee. They're two completely different things. The non-devotee is not getting the grace of Krishna. He's only getting, I wouldn't even call it the grace. He's only getting the mathematics of 2 plus 2 equals 4, and 4 plus 4 equals 8, and 8 plus 8 equals 16. Logic and reason and material understanding, that's all. There is no grace coming to him, except probably the mildest. When I say grace, I mean what is coming from him is what we call general karma, okay? And you just get what you, as you said, put in the fruit, and now you get the result. That's it. Now, as soon as a person like that begins to turn to devotional life, he enters a totally different category. If he has even the slightest spark of devotion, dedication, affection, even the slightest. He comes under, and you also gave the quote which actually proves this. He comes under the guidance, the direction, the understanding, the inspiration, and the impulse of Krishna. In other words, the Lord is watching, as opposed to merely observing. Watching means there's some attentiveness there. Observing merely means, ho-hum, I see what he's doing, but he doesn't really care for me. He couldn't care less about me. So he will get the fruit of what he thinks is real, which is material world, which is not only the material world, but the illusory world. And that's what he gets. He doesn't get any more. But the devotee is praying to the Lord. He's citing the Lord's, or saying the Lord's name over and over. The name of the Lord invokes him. I'm sorry. Pulls the Lord to him. And the more depth, the more intensity, the more helplessness, the more desperation he feels, then the Lord, like a loving mother or even a loving father, gives his affection, his warmth, he gives his miracles at times, things that we would never expect we suddenly find ourselves with, and it's not normal, it's not ordinary, and we then conclude that God really loves me because this is not what I normally would get. In fact, many prayers of devotees is that, look at what you're giving me. You've given me a temple here. You've given me yourself in the form of the deities. You've given me yourself in the form of devotees. If that's not great, quote Kwama, if that's not grace, if that's not God's love, well, what is? But the persons who simply think that things happen by accident, they happen by, you know, by happenstance, people think that things are happening just by
chance,
what they call destiny, but it's really all they're getting is their you know, what they put in. Example: I didn't want to belabor the point. We see a hurricane. Okay, we've all seen pictures of them, and we watch houses. Why this heavy wind being knocked down one after? I've seen a whole line. Knocked down, boom, boom, and then the very hurricane begins to move away from that line of houses, maybe two houses, and comes back and knocks down more. It appears that there is just plan, and it's God's plan. Some are getting it, and some are not getting it. Those who are not getting it are getting the grace of God, and that's what we talk about. When we talk about destiny for devotees, the grace of God, and the destiny of non-devotees, which means they get what they earned.
Mechanical, right? Yeah, well, for non-devotees.
Yeah, like you put a part together and you want it to work. So if you're missing a screw, it doesn't work. So in this case, you get what you deserve. In the case of grace, you get what Krishna wants you to have, because he thinks it's in your best interest to grow higher, bigger, greater, and more dear to him. Whereas the other person, although he loves them all, but he does not give special care, interest, affection, and all those wonderful things unless a person begs, cries, appreciates, is so grateful for the launch activity. And at the end, when he gets saved, he doesn't just say, oh, well, what can you expect? I'm such a great, wonderful person. He doesn't think that way. Rather, he thinks like the Goswamis, I deserve the worst. My house should have also gone down. But he thinks, because I'm so fallen, so wretched, I made so many mistakes, I do so many wrongs, and yet the Lord is taking care of me. Because the Lord is seeing all the good things and almost disregarding the bad things. The good things meaning how much devotion, love, dedication, and that he has for the Lord. So therefore, you become dearer and dearer and dearer and dearer. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path. And those who don't follow his path get 1 plus 1, and 2 plus 2, and 3 plus 2. And actually, always a wondering, why do I get such bad luck? Why is God doing this to us? This is their mentality. But the mentality that it previously, the devotee says, why is God so good to me? Why is he so kind to me? Why is he so loving to me? When all those other people are getting, like this, living here. Balmy breezes, nice sunshine, the ocean nearby, not too much traffic in this area, a little bit, not so much. So when the devotee begins to see that, yes, the Lord is so sweet, so kind, wonderful, even when you're not good, but in spite of that fact, he will take care, give thought, give forgiveness, and help the devotee move forward on his path as opposed to just ignoring the others because they ignored the Lord. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.